Welcome to Day Zero Update for June 28th, 2026. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
And I'm Brandon Perkins.
Yeah, two-man crew this week as Danreb is out in the middle of the desert for Evo. What's left of it?
Please send help.
Evo not doing great. It's like a certain country bought it, and a lot of people don't want to associate with them.
Yep.
So there's
there's
been a sharp downturn in people entering for the tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you'll still have plenty of the big names.
Oh, yeah.
Because they still got to make some money.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure they're not happy with that.
Mm.
But yeah, this week, a big week as, let's just say, a bunch of negative news happened this week.
Mm-hmm.
We have, let me see here. 3, 4, 5, 6 stories about layoffs and studios shutting down. All kinds of fun stuff there. We got price increases. We got new hardware at very high prices. And even we have a controversy over GTA 5 or GTA 6.
Yep.
Doing some things with their pre-orders. So we'll get to all that stuff here in a bit. Before we do that, we'll talk about what we've been playing.
Mm-hmm.
And, I've been playing some stuff. I've been playing more Mold Washer after reviewing it.
Mm-hmm.
I did a stream and kind of had to help hold back to not just burn through all of it. Now that I have beaten that game, sort of knew where I could just do most of this stuff.
And I've
improved on a couple things with updates. Because there's... you get a leaf blower, and like one of the main things you do is like blow this rice off of various things.
Mm-hmm.
At a point, they're like, "Well, now there's rice all over the floor. You need to clean that up too."
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, just blow it into these garbage bags. And initially, when I did this before launch, I was like, "What the fuck do I do with this bag?" Because it's nothing obvious that saying where to put this trash bag, and what it wanted you to do is notice this cabinet door was open and just toss it in there. But I actually like quit out and restarted, like, maybe this is a bug.
Mm.
And I went like walking around and like eventually figured out that the cursor turns into like a mouse. It changes from an arrow cursor to the like finger cursor kind of thing, like when you're gonna click on something. And that was how I knew like what was going on there. Now they just put an arrow on that, so you know, like, hey, put it over here. Like, all right, this would have been nice to have before launch, but whatever. That game seems to be doing pretty well for a small game like this. I think they announced they sold 20,000 copies in 4 days, which is pretty good for them. Which is good. And yeah, they announced they're going to be doing more stuff, more content and some DLC and all that, console versions, so that's great.
That is great.
For that. But yeah, I played through a bunch of it and showed off like why I didn't like certain things, like all the stuff that you have to break up with a pickaxe or a fire axe. Just kind of is boring because you can't upgrade it, so you're basically breaking up this, you know, I think one of the first ones you do is like, oh, there's these moldy cookies in this bag. You go in there and you just break them up. You just literally have to have it kind of smash this stuff into non-existence.
Mm-hmm.
You have to go through the whole thing. And it's just such a tedious thing, whereas most of the rest of the game is not that. And the like flamethrower is a cool idea for what you could imagine you could do with that, and what you actually do with it is not all that cool. Like one of the stages, I was like, it says I'm missing something. I was like, oh, I need to set these napkins on fire for some reason. These napkins didn't look like disgusting or anything. You just set them on fire, they burn to a crisp basically and disappear. I was like, okay, sure, I guess that's the thing you can do. That seems like something you would also do, and then the house sets on fire, but that's not how this game's gonna work.
Nope.
But you use it on, like, fungus that grows in the Oh, in like the walls, at a certain point, and you just literally burn it, and it kind of like crumples up until it disappears. I guess not as satisfying as what I would want out of this. And yeah, then you get like a fire extinguisher. I really don't know what the point of that one is. There's nothing like stays on fire in this game. It's just like a different kind of washer, I guess. I don't know. So that's why I was like, the first three things you get are pretty fun, and the rest of them are kind of okay. Like if you could upgrade the pickaxe to do like bigger spots that it breaks up, like that would be great. But that's not what happens. But yeah, that's one that check out on PC. It's $9. I think still on sale for 10% off, so almost $8. It's good use of your time for, you know, an afternoon or so. Then I went and played some more Solar Punk because I was trying to get through some more progression there, and that worked itself out. But now I'm trying to get cheap milk because that's where the milk comes from. They don't have cows in this game, just sheep. So I went and had to collect some more sheep because waiting on one to pop out milk takes a while, and the other one will help double up the progress on that. So still working through that. But yeah, that's what I got there. And then the big thing I got this week is the Superstation 1. I pre-ordered this when it kind of first went up in January of last year. I got the bundle with the Super Dock, which doesn't serve a purpose right at this moment, but it will in the future when they get the console mode going, which is sort of a new interface for the Mister FPGA device, which is a sort of thing that's been going on for a few years now. Essentially, like a standardized spec for this kind of retro device that essentially tries to be the most accurate recreation of the hardware and software form to essentially emulate the every like little bit of it, almost like reverse engineering these consoles. Which takes a good bit of work, and the place where it maxes out is on the PS1, Saturn, and N64 generation. They very much weren't sure they were going to be able to get those working right, and they've got them working pretty well. Every game I've thrown at it has worked well. So that's been cool. So yeah, I had to set it up. It comes with a 64 gig micro SD card. I had a 400 gig one from my Switch that I used originally before I upgraded that one, and had to learn how to like flash firmware onto one of these for, you know, the Mr. FPGA stuff, and that took a bit to figure out how all that works because Windows also does not like messing with storage devices like this. So like as I would finish, it'd be like, hey, you got this storage device, it needs to be reformatted to use it in Windows. And I'm like, I'm not using it in Windows, you idiots. But every time I plug it in, it's like, oh, you need to reformat this to use it in Windows. And it's like, man, shut the fuck. I have to cancel it every single time, like twice every time I plug it back in to add new stuff or fix things, because I also did a number of not bad things, but things that just add time to getting it set up. Like not unzipping the files of ROMs when you go to put it in, because it can recognize that it has stuff in there, but when if it's, you know, essentially double zipped, it does not like that. So I'd have to go back and or unzip it. Finding out one of the, I think it was the Game Boy Advance stuff I had, wherever I got this from, it was 7-zipped instead of regular zipped, and this thing did not like that. I had to go find another version of that that was just zipped, regular zipped, and that takes a while for Game Boy Advance stuff, because that's 11 gigs worth of stuff in there, and it's a ton of files, and it just takes like 10 to 15 minutes each time, just sitting there and letting that happen. And like some of the platforms, it just didn't work right. I'll have to keep working on them, trying to get the Atari Jaguar stuff working in there. I could get the logo coming up, which is a good logo, but I wanted to play some games on it, and that didn't work as I was hoping it would. the N64 stuff has been pretty good. The one thing I had to do is use my specific Retro Fighters N64 controller for this, so I had to plug that in to make that work. It's not a big issue, and I had to specifically map it, because the annoying thing is the way they set this stuff up, much like RetroArch and all this other stuff, they set up by default to the Super Nintendo controller format. So
yeah,
I'm using a DualSense. I have to hit circle to accept things, and that's not great. You can't just change it to, hey, every other controller uses A or the X button, the South button, essentially.
Yeah,
like that's not a thing that you can do, as far as I know. Which is annoying, especially when I plug in an N64 controller, and from there, it doesn't want to use the A button for that. It uses the B button. And I have to keep telling myself, no, not the one you think you should do. It's the other one. Because even when a Nintendo controller is in here, still weird with that stuff.
Mm.
And so, yeah, there's a lot of options for this, for some visual improvements you can make. Some platforms are just weird, because like the N64, you can get like the clean HDMI feed of the game, and that removes all the things that moves over the bad parts of what N64 games can look like. Mm. I think it was Super Mario 64 I was trying out with this. I was like, oh no, this removed all the blurriness. That's hiding every issue this thing has with it. So there's like a lot of options for like texture filtering and all this kind of stuff that I was like turning it off and on and like turning it on. It's like, okay, I see what this is doing. And all that kind of stuff. Like maybe I could turn off some of the texture filtering stuff, give the texture a little more definition. But the visual quality of that system, what it could do, they needed those textures to look as blurry as possible to hide a lot of issues with those games. So that was fun to like mess around with. Some of the others have some fun things that you can do, like faster loading on the PS1 stuff. I think it's still an experimental thing. So it's like, hey, you can do this. It might cause crashes sometimes. I never had any issues with that, but the other thing I had to turn off is it has like a little display thing. It pops up when resolution changes to tell you like what that is looking like. And I was playing Guardians Crusade on the PS1, a JRPG that I played as a kid. It was localized by Activision, in case you wonder how weird that is. It has kind of a what if you mixed Chrono Trigger with Tamagotchi kind of JRPG. But initially you play a character named Knight, who's, you know, going around this town, and every single time you click on a thing and get a dialogue box, it changes the resolution to zoom in. And so I'd be seeing this thing literally every few seconds. I was like, I gotta turn this off, because this is untenable. There's like some issues like that you can work with. And I think the other thing I want to do with this thing is there's people figured out how to get retro achievements working on the Mister, which was something that I think people were skeptical if that could ever happen. So I kind of want to get that set up. Unfortunately, it doesn't seem like you can just add that into a regular Mister install on this. Mm-hmm. So luckily I have the original micro SD card, and I'm going to try and install that on there. Then you can play a bunch of these retro games and get retro achievements, which is a cool thing that I enjoy. The chances I get to mess around with that stuff. But yeah, I have a DualSense that is synced to the Superstation 1 via Bluetooth. Mm. The N64 controller I just plug in through USB because I want that to stay synced to the Switch 2. Mm. That works fine. The nice thing is this thing looks like the, if you remember the PS1, the remodel, the mini remodel they did.
Yeah.
When they dropped it to, I think, $100.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like that. So it's a really nice, slick looking device. No, you know, disk system in there, so you don't have to worry about that. Mm-hmm. So that's why they had the dock. But it has the controller ports and the memory card ports on it.
Yeah.
So you can enable that to work in the PS1 emulator.
Mm-hmm.
You know, save to those memory cards and all that, so that is pretty cool. Because the way they handle the saving stuff is, you know, like any emulator, it's only as good as its ability to back those saves up.
Yeah.
For what you're doing there. And so, yeah, that's another thing I had to go do is, like, turn on this autosave feature that are in a lot of these cores.
Mm-hmm. And
then you have to do that while it's in a game that can actually save so that it's backs that up to the SD card and you can load stuff from there. And so that's a thing that you have to do. Because there's no like instruction manual with this. It gives you a QR code that'll pull up a YouTube video that the creator of this, Taki Udon, made, which you can tell that he is, you know, been entrenched in all this for ages because he zooms by certain things and I'm like, wait, what was that? How do I do this thing? Which just makes me think of the Simpsons episode where their foundation cracks and Homer gets a self-help video from Troy McClure. Mm-hmm. And before he's able to do anything, it's zoomed past what hit the first thing he's trying to do. And he's immediately just going through all these advanced steps. And he's like, wait a bit, what are we? No, I can't do this. And giving up on that. So that's what I felt like at times on this, but essentially I downloaded the video so I could just play it at my own speed and not be subject to YouTube bullshit with it. So went through it and kind of got most everything set up the way that I needed to for that. So yeah, that works pretty well. Now that I've done this once, it's pretty easy to set up. I'm still adding things. I got one of those USB adapters that allows you to put a micro SD card, essentially flash it or load stuff onto the card pretty easily from a computer.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I've been using, which works out pretty well. And I think I still have plenty of room to put like PS1 games and all that.
Oh, yeah.
Because, yeah, PS1 games take up a lot of space.
Yeah, they do.
Because a CD gets up to about 700 megabytes.
Yep.
And then there's some multi-disc games.
Mm.
Right now I'm not putting so much that I have like readily available on like the current consoles.
Yeah.
None of the Final Fantasy games or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly been putting like Gran Turismo, a bunch of the sports games I played on it. I was playing some like NHL 98 and it was like, oh yeah, I remember this game where everybody has the same face, because that was the level of quality they could do at that point. Yeah, playing Guardians Crusade and a handful of other games there. Saturn stuff, I don't have a ton there. I got maybe like a dozen games on there. Not quite as well-versed in like what the good games are there. And the thing I was like pulling from, I had a bunch of like beta versions of games and such, so I'm like, I don't really want the unfinished stuff. I want the legit games. So I got like Sega Rally Racing and some of that kind of stuff. The Shining games, the Panzer Dragoon games, some of that kind of stuff. So I'll still keep adding to it and playing around with it. So I did a stream kind of playing a bunch of stuff from around the different cores, kind of showing off what's interesting about this thing. And yeah, really been enjoying that so far. The one thing is it's it does not come with a power cable that can plug into a wall. It's a USB-C cable. So I have to unplug my Switch 2's adapter that it has for that. So I need to get a special one just for the Superstation. So that I can have it, you know, ready to go whenever. But otherwise, it's not really an issue. I did plug it in my PS5 for a bit to try it out to see how that would work. And like once I started trying to play PS1 games, stuff that's more the power draw, it would just like freak out and shut off. I was like, that makes sense. The thing's not intended to power like a second console. Even one that's working on a bit of a lower scale than that, but I could play NES games on there just fine. I tried out like Tidalide, which is an interesting RPG that's, you know, much like the early Ys games where you're just bumping into enemies. But it's really easy.
I gotta admit, I've played the first couple of Ys games, and that whole thing of where you're just like walking up and it like automatically attacks them, it's very awkward to get used to.
Yeah, and Hydalide, you have to hold a button to actually attack.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're in defense mode. So I was like, why am I not doing damage to any of these enemies? I'm like, oh, I had to hold the A button essentially to do that.
Yep.
It's like, this makes sense, but also lets you die very quickly because you don't necessarily have a great grasp on how much damage they're doing to you. You just have bars that go down and then slowly fill back up. It's very clumsy in that way. This is like one of the first kind of games trying this thing, so I understand why it is the way it is.
Yeah.
But they would obviously improve on it when they made Virtual Hydalide. Which is a game that is presented as like one of the worst games ever, and it's not really. It's just a very specific kind of game.
Yeah.
I think I saw a Giant Bomb play through it. And it, like, you just push through. Don't do stupid things, and you get through it in a few hours. It's not that complicated of a game.
Yeah.
And if you check out the speedruns on like AGDQ, they get through that very quick because they know exactly what to do with that stuff. But it is a roguelite game because it remixes the map every time and change where everything's at. But yeah, it's a game that doesn't look as good as you would hope because it's rotoscope people kind of very low res kind of stuff. But yeah. So that's kind of the stuff you can get up to on this system, and I've been enjoying it so far. So that's been pretty much what I've been doing. So how about you, Brandon?
Well, as for me, I had been playing, and I finished last night Deltarune Chapter 5. That chapter is probably the longest that this game has had so far. Like barring the first chapter, which was fairly on the long side, considering it was the beginning. I won't spoil anything because there is like a bunch of plot stuff that happens. But basically, another one of those dark worlds opens up in Asgore's flower shop. And you and, of course, Susie and Ralsei all have to go in there and, you know, stop the dark fountain from, you know, doing what it does. And this time the world that you go into, you would think, oh, it's flower thing, which kind of, there is a lot of flower stuff, but it's mostly based around Japan. And one of the like, innovations that they add on to for this particular chapter is, there's basically two modes of play, that you switch in between as you're going through it. There is the standard one, you know, the RPG one where, you know, the RPG slash bullet hell one where you have to, you know, try and deal with the enemy while also, you know, avoiding their attacks and all the unique ways they throw a curveball into that. But there's a point in the game where you suddenly get a hold of this thing. Basically, it's literally called the magic feather. And what the magic feather does is, it'll give you the power to go to these objects, that if you strike them, they will turn the game from a, top-down RPG into a side-scrolling action platformer game. And the way it works is, obviously you being Chris, your primary attack is the sword, but Susie and Ralsei also have their own, specific uses. Susie uses her justice axe to throw out projectiles, and Ralsei can like create platforms. And there's a bunch of like platforming related stuff and like some platforming challenges. Some of it is required, some of it isn't, and there's like a whole like sort of side quest where you can get like a secret boss. And it's it it once again, it's just an amazing game. Deltarune is an amazing freaking game, and I am constantly amazed at how Toby Fox finds ways to throw. Basically, just throw a curveball into the whole affair and mix things up in ways that you wouldn't expect from, the Deltarune sort of formula, if you want to call it. The only other thing I will say is that this is the one chapter where Flowey makes his grand return. Only this time, he's called Flowery, and I will just leave it at that. And of course, being it's a Toby Fox game, the music is incredible. And he gets a couple of collaborators that work with him this time. And there's at least one song on here that's going to be stuck on my head in repeat for weeks at on end. But other than that, I'm also still playing Terranigma. I don't think I talked about this enough last week because we were trying to go through all the shit that had been revealed. Terranigma is a game by Quintet, the same people who created ActRaiser and Soul Blazer and Illusion of Gaia. It's the one game by them I had never played before, and turns out there's a good reason for that. It's because it was never officially released in North America because Enix had shut down their American branch at that point because, they were in the middle of the merger with Squaresoft. But if you've ever played any of the other, if you've played Soul Blazer, if you've played Illusion of Gaia, you kind of have an idea of how this game plays. It's a top-down action RPG a la Zelda, but with more RPG elements thrown in, so a bit more like Zelda 2. There's like a huge chunk of it that takes place essentially in a hollow earth, or what you think is a hollow earth, because it's like the horizon is like above you and everything, and it cycles around, and it's a little freaky to experience when you first start it. But eventually you do go up into what is, in fact, Earth, but it's a long, barren Earth, and your job is to basically go around and to try and revive it. So you go trying to, so like you go to the Eden Tree and try to bring back greenery to the world. Then you go try to bring back the birds and the animals. And the wind so that the birds can fly, stuff like that. And it's a damn good game. An amazing game. I'm playing this through the SNES ROM. Through the and it's I really cannot explain more than that. It's just so damn good. And it's weirdly like artsy in a way that you wouldn't expect a JRPG from the mid 90s to be. Like this game was like at the very came out at like the very tail end of the SNES's life cycle. So like this actually like came out after Super Mario RPG, which was supposed to be like the it and Chrono Trigger were supposed to be like the grand send-off for the system. But if you ever get the chance, please play it. It is a very good game. And I'm also playing Splatoon 3, not as much because I've been trying to get through Deltarune, but yeah, I'm still playing that. And yeah, that's about it.
All right, so yeah, let's get to some news. And the first news is one of the big things that happened this week. Valve announced when the Steam machine is going to be launching.
Mm-hmm.
It is June 30th, so in a couple days here. I believe they've already done pre-orders for the initial allotment. And yeah, this thing's going to cost you a lot if you want one of these, especially
yep.
for the launch era of this. And I bet you it's going to keep going up as the cost for some of these components go up. But yeah, they have a 512 gigabyte model and a 2 terabyte model, both with and without the controllers. And as you might expect, you get a little discount for getting the controller. I think it's about $20 off for that. So yeah, it's $1,049 for the 512 gigabit model without the controller. And then I believe $1,129 for the controller version. And then, yeah, much like the Steam Machine 2 terabyte model, with controllers, $1,428, and that would be $1,349, I believe, for the without controller model. So yeah, things are gonna put you down for a pretty penny to pre-order these things. Essentially, we're doing a lottery system, at least here in the U.S., where everybody that's signed up for the list at a certain point, we get randomly placed on their placement would be randomized, and everybody after that would just be added to the end. For that. But I know pre-orders in Japan went up pretty smoothly. I imagine they're probably not getting a ton of models there for that. But yeah, from what reviews and such were suggesting, this thing is basically on the power level of the PS5 base model, which is good, but also maybe not $1,000 or $1,400 good for that. But yeah, they have extra face plates with the, I think, the 2 terabyte model there, though they are also going to put out the, I think, the CAD file for that so that you can print out your own, and people will be selling customized versions of those things, so you can customize that a pretty good bit there, and all that. And yeah, it seems like a really neat device, just coming out at the worst possible time, as Valve, you know, unlike Sony and Nintendo and Microsoft, is not a hardware company that, you know, continually produces hardware in large numbers. So they are sort of more at the whim of the component costs whenever they're ordering a new batch of that stuff.
Yeah.
And so that kind of means these prices will probably be pretty fluid at a certain point. Which is a shame for them, but yeah, I'm going to assume you're not down for one of these, Brandon.
Not really, no.
Yeah. If I had plenty of money to spend on things like this, I would maybe consider it. But also let it work its way through a bunch of revisions and updates and all that. Because, yeah, as much as I like my Steam Deck, it's very rough around the edges for a lot of things. And so this kind of consoleized PC version, I assume, will still have plenty of weird issues with it and all that. And so, yeah, that's just going to be I think to see how things go over the next few years, and maybe we get over the hump and things go down in price. I don't know. We'll see. But that's your Steam Machine. It's going to finally be available, though. If you did not get in them early, you're probably going to be waiting for a while for one. So yeah, there you go for the Steam Machine. Let's see. Then we got a couple of games here. The Witch's Bakery. Got a date of August 20th. This is on pretty much everything. PS5, Xbox, Switch, Switch 2, and PC. It'll be out August 20th. This is sort of a side-scrolling adventure RPG kind of game. Yeah, about a witch who opens her bakery in modern Paris. Probably a little bit of Kiki's Delivery Service to this. But I think less flight from what I've seen of this, but still a lot of the cutesy, cozy vibes of that movie. Which just looks pretty nice. If you're looking for games that are nice in the near future, this one seems like something to check out. But yeah, that's one to keep an eye on. And then we got this delay. Rattatan was supposed to be out pretty soon. I think it was, yeah, July 16th. But it's been delayed a few months and will be out October 15th in 1.0 for PS5, Xbox, Switch 2, and PC. Yeah, currently in early access on PC, but yeah. That's a shame, but they seem to want to make sure they get it as good a shape as possible for launch. And that makes sense for, don't come out of early access if you're not ready for everybody to be judgy about it. And that seems to be their main goal here, so looking forward to that. I have the PC version. It's a pretty good game. Looking forward to see how it looks when it's in 1.0. But so there you go. Have to wait a bit more for that to hit your consoles. And speaking of consoles, GTA 6 finally got the pre-orders open on the 25th the other day. And we found out that there are two editions that will be there at launch: an $80 edition, the base edition, and the ultimate edition for $99.99.
Which I mean is on the surface you think it's not too bad. I mean it, I you know it's not as bad as everybody was thinking it was. Wait. There's a catch.
The base edition will be available somewhat physically. It's more of a code in a box, which some retailers are just not going to stock, because they want to sell, disc-based games. And there's been a lot of consternation about that, which I get. I imagine Rockstar may make a disc version later on. I think some retailers are like, they're going to do that in a few months. And Rockstar is like, no, we're not. And I was like, yeah, they're going to wait till the PC version's ready and put a disc version for the consoles and get you double dipping, buying whatever you want there, spending way more money than you really wanted to.
And that's before they end up doing another GTA Online.
Yeah, because they are describing this as a single player game, which contradicts what everybody's expecting the new online mode to be, which I think was rumored to be like, oh, it'll have multiple cities in Leonidas, which is Florida, and that kind of stuff, and would have new content, new areas added over time, and all this kind of extra content, and that just much like GTA 5 did originally, that's not going to be there at launch. What the plan is for the online mode, we don't know, and kind of we don't know much of really anything about this game because they've just not really said much. Mostly what we know is the what is in the Ultimate Edition, which is a bunch of customization stuff there. Yeah, they let's see, you get a special vehicle, special revolvers, some extra safe house vehicles. Let's see, a build mod kit. You get access to Sarah's unisex salon, which has exclusive hairstyles for Jason and Lucia. Yeah, there's a clothing store you get access to with exclusive apparel for both characters. There's a tattoo shop with exclusive tattoos designed by the artist collective Fail. It's with an E on the end. There's a mod shop you get access to called One-Eyed Willy's, which if you want to know if there's Rockstar's or GTA style juvenile humor, there you go. There's a Good Time Gear apparel collection in this, and some classic cars, I guess. For that, yeah, classic cars you have to track down, almost like the barn finds in Forza Horizon. So yeah, which people are taking is like, oh, all the customizations exclusive to the Ultimate Edition. Like, it doesn't seem the case. It just seems like there's specific bonus ones. Otherwise, it'd be really stupid. Be like, this is the only way you can get, you know, special outfits or special hairstyles or different hairstyles or tattoos or whatever. So yeah, that's been seems like doing really well on pre-orders, and I don't know why you'd pre-order it unless you're going for the physical edition that you might be able to get a discount on, gift cards and whatnot.
I mean, for because of the way that's going, I'm just like, screw it. I'm just gonna probably do it digital.
Yeah. But the interesting thing, since the physical edition is not a disc, that will be launching a week early so that you get the code and can essentially preload it ahead of time. That's a neat little bonus thing there.
Kind
Imagine
of,
that
I
game
guess.
is going to be quite a big download, I assume. Because I pre-downloaded GTA 5 because I was like, I haven't played this in a while, and because of all the upgrades, or the platform upgrades, the version I beat was the PS3 version, which did not run well. But when I, got the upgrade to the PS4 version and the PS5 version, I was not very far into the game because I had already beaten it. And yeah, this is 102 gigs on this for GTA 5, so I imagine this GTA 6 is going to be a good bit more than that. So we'll see. I'm sure we'll find out before launch. That is still 4.5 months away. There's still time, and yeah, we haven't really gotten any new information about the game really outside of that. Seems like they do have a pre-order bonus, which is a vintage Vice City pack, so that you get some 80s style stuff in there. And I guess if you pre-order digitally, you get a free month of GTA Plus, which is their like subscription service that gets you some extra games, Rockstar games, and all that in there, and GTA Online benefits and other stuff. Which I would say that's another reason not to do it right away, because it seems like when that happens, it subscribes you for the service, and like all services, it turns on the auto renew. So you got to make sure you turn that off when you get that, so you don't get charged extra for that. But that's your GTA 6 news of the week. And yeah, not really much to add there unless you have anything, Brandon.
No, like I said, it's not as bad as I thought it was going to be, but there's no physical edition right now, so I'm just going to do digital.
Yeah.
Like I would rather just go ahead and do that than, waste time going out to just buy a plastic box that doesn't have anything in it.
You could use that for a different game. If it even has the little disc holder in it, I don't know. That'd be the cheap way to do it, is just like, just throw in 500,000 of these disc cases. Because why not? There's tons of those around. But yeah, that's your GTA news of the week. And we still got some other news here. NBA The Run that came out seems to be getting pretty good reception there. But sort of one of the issues that people have with it is that it's a multiplayer only game, which is fine. But also the reason people liked NBA The Streets is that it had a good campaign to it. Especially that first one where you essentially play games against other teams, and if you won, you got to take one of their players onto your team, which is like a pretty cool thing to do. And so yeah, it seems like the game has done well enough that the developers said they are planning to add a campaign mode to the game, but it won't be until next year. But yeah, they also have other stuff on their roadmap, things like. Let's see, yeah, updates to fix bugs and all that, new content, new players, maybe some players from the draft that just happened. Yeah, their seasons are going to be starting in August. I don't know if that's going to be a battle pass style or just things to unlock. I don't know. But yeah, there's a bunch of stuff here for that if you're interested in, but Yeah, if you're waiting for the campaign, you'll have to wait till, let's see, spring 2027, as they say. So they're taking their time with that, and yeah, that's when I'll be probably jumping in. But yeah,
Yeah.
that'd be cool to see. But yeah, we'll get that's it for the game news. We got industry news, and there's like two good news bits here. So we'll start with those.
Sure.
Italian developer 34 Big Things has managed to buy themselves out from Embracer Group. This studio worked on yeah, the Redout games, as well as Carmageddon and Rogue Shift. And yeah, they've bought 100% of the studio stock from the Embracer Group. Yeah, they are, with this move, they are essentially the second largest independent game developer in Italy. So that's cool. They say here, returning to full independence gives us absolute autonomy to shape our structure, our projects, and our development approach. It's refreshing to be steering our own ship once more. This new chapter will begin with an absolute bang. Later this year, we'll be announcing a major title built on one of the most important, beloved, and revered intellectual properties in the world. And that's just the start. Our production pipeline is fully charged, with another major title scheduled for 2027, followed by another groundbreaking project slated for 2028. So that's good for them. I don't know what big property they would be working on. Maybe they got with Sony to make a new Wipeout. That'd be cool. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what could be.
No idea.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll find out. So maybe that'll be like the Game Awards type of thing. I don't know. Maybe Gamescom. We'll see.
We'll see.
That's good for them. The other one here is the developers of Magic: The Gathering Arena have successfully unionized, which is good because this has been kind of a clusterfuck for a while now. They've been working on this, and Hasbro and Wizards of the Coast have been kind of try to stall it as much as they can. But yeah, they participated in NLRB election on June 2nd. Decide whether or not it's unionized, and yeah, the majority of participants voted in favor of the move. So that's cool. They will be unionizing. Yeah, I think under the Communication Workers of America banner, as United Wizards of the Coast, CWA, search of generative AI assurances, layoff protections, transparency around compensation, and more. Which is good because Wizards of the Coast not been in great shape for a while, though.
No, they have
They
not.
realize they can license out Magic: The Gathering stuff to every brand under the sun, even The Office. They've been making bank off of some of those. What was the Final Fantasy boosters they did that was literally the most successful launch they've ever had? That's for anything Magic: The Gathering. So they figured out, hey, we can make a ton of money off of this. Let's do that every couple months. And they have. So, and yeah, they have that stuff added into the arena, which is just their PC and mobile client Magic: The Gathering stuff. So you can play that digitally if you don't have people, physically around you to play Magic: The Gathering with. And I believe they do have mechanics for getting your cards, your packs into the game itself, so another nice touch. So yeah, some good news there. Yeah, unless you have anything to add, Brandon.
Other than the fact that, the again, momentum's on the side of labor, as I've said over and over again. There's been a couple of, back steps, but it's mostly been going in that direction. So, again, just another one to add to the group. But yeah, Wizards of the Coast just kind of sucks right now.
Yeah. And speaking of companies that are not into momentum, Xbox has announced that they are increasing prices of their consoles again, which is not a huge surprise because after they revealed that 25th anniversary edition of the Series X at their showcase, I was like, especially with the announcement for that, they said the price is not going to be available just yet. I was like, well, that's because they're going to be increasing the price before that comes out. Then it'll be the case. So as part of this, the 2 terabyte Xbox Series X model is being discontinued. I'm guessing the cost on that is just astronomical compared to the 512 and 1 terabyte models. And the fun thing is, in the Xbox Wire post, they do not say what the prices of any of these consoles are.
Yeah.
They just say the 512 gigabit models will go up by $100 and the 1 terabyte models for $150. And it's like, what does that mean? What are those prices?
Yeah.
And so I had to go to other articles that actually say what the prices are. So the Xbox Series S 512 gigabit model is going up from $399 to $499. Essentially the cost of the PS5 at launch for the disc edition. This is for a less powerful Xbox without a disc drive in it. The 1 terabyte model is going up from $449 to $599. That thing went from a $50 difference to a $100 difference for that. That's still a huge increase there. The Xbox Series X digital 1 terabyte model is going up from $599 to $749. Which is a lot there. And for, they keep the $50 difference here. The regular 1 terabyte with the disk drive is going up from $649 to $799, which is, a lot of money. I had to look at the PlayStation Direct site to be like, all right, what are the prices of PS5s at this point? I'm going to double check here just to be sure. The Pro is $899, which gets you a 2 terabyte drive on that. And, runs games a bit better. But the regular digital edition is $599, which is the same price as the Xbox Series S 1 terabyte model. And is essentially the price that the Series X digital 1 terabytes was before. The regular PS5 with the disc drive is $649. That's $100 cheaper than the Series X digital. So they're sandwiched right in between there, between the PS5 and the PS5 Pro.
Yeah.
For the Series X. And that's a hell of a place to be. If you want refurbished for PS5s, they're $100 cheaper, I believe, for that. And they do mention on the Xbox Wire article that they have new programs to make them more affordable.
Yeah.
Which means buy now, pay later is the thing you can do.
Yep.
Which says it's interest-free. Obviously, look at the details.
Yeah.
Sure, if that is the case, and depending on how long you're paying it, every month for that, that may be fine way to do it. If you need one and don't want to deal with all this.
Yeah.
And I forgot to mention this starts August 1st. So you got about a month change to get one if you are somehow just waiting till now to get an Xbox. They're also doing, working with partners to let players purchase eligible Xbox hardware at 0% APR financing for up to 12 months. So that's, I guess, a different thing, maybe through stores. Previously played consoles so that you can get used consoles, I guess, at like GameStop or whatever. But they also are going to have certified refurbished consoles through the Microsoft Store.
Yeah.
Up to $100 off MSRP. So, yeah, that's the whole thing there. We also do have this interesting bit here, as they say, unfortunately, console storage and memory prices have increased by more than 2.5 times, and we expect another doubling by the fall of 2027.
Yeah.
I'm letting you know that there will probably be another one by the end of next year. At least one. But, not great. So, imagine you're glad you already have one.
Yeah. Yes, I am.
Yeah, and I was like, Boy, my Series S that I got for $300 around launch, that thing's now as much as what I paid for my PS5 at launch. And that's way too much money for a Series S.
Yep. And the only reason I got a Series S was because the PS5s were basically impossible to find then.
Yeah. And yeah, because that thing is not as capable as the Series X. It maxes out at, I think, 1080p for everything that it
Yep.
plays. Maybe there's some trickery to get like 1440p or something, but pretty sure that's 1080p console. You obviously have no disk drives, so any physical games you had no longer playable. They don't have any options for getting that on the cheap or anything in Series X. Just a lot of money, $800. That's a lot. But yeah, that's your Xbox news. I don't know if you have anything to add.
No, not really.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, it is another sign that, Xbox is sort of, it's another one of their examples of them reshuffling everything, because of money.
Yeah, and they've decided they want to get back into console hardware at the worst possible time. So they're dealing with the fallout of that. So there you go. There's your Xbox news of the week. But we have more bad news and stuff that's worse because it involves people getting laid off and all that. We have the studio behind Mudang Two Hearts that was announced last year at the Xbox showcase has shut down, declared bankruptcy. And yeah, it said that game didn't even get out. So I don't know. I assume they just ran out of funding for something. I don't know if they had any publicly known funding here. I don't know. I guess they were at one point working on metaverse stuff, but that obviously had the bottom fallout. So I don't know what exactly all happened here, but not great. And a bunch of people in Korea lost their jobs. So wish them the best of luck there. There's that, and another studio shut down. Who's PCMs, the studio that made Shady Part of Me, and more recently, earlier this year, Neo Memories in Orbit, has shut down because that game just did not sell well enough to make back their money.
Which sucks because it was an amazing game.
Yeah, it's one of the best games of the year. It's sort of a Metroid-y game, but you're a little robot who's trying to bring this facility back to life and along the way take care of all the corrupted robots that are around fucking shit up. And peeing into a pool to fill up this this like main bot's powers. That's not an exaggeration. It's yellow liquid you're putting in this pool that it sucks right up. But yeah, that's a shame. If you are interested in that genre, definitely check that game out. The Steam sale, summer sale's happening, so it's probably on sale there. Better late than never, because at least somebody at the studio will benefit from that. But yeah, they've had to shut down because they just ran out of money. I guess Focus Entertainment is going to retain publishing rights for the game. So they'll get the money, I guess, and not the developers. So yeah, that's it's a French developer shutting down, which seems like may not be the last one because Nacon was French and they have been suffering a lot of issues, and there's Don't Nod and Quantic Dream that are also suffering issues, so not many countries doing great developments.
No, not right now.
But we got EA. They're going to be acquired by the Saudis here later this year.
Of course.
And they had another round of layoffs. This seems like a lot of the office people. So a lot of recruitment, customer support, safety, and IT staff. Which I guess would be the sort of people you might lay off as you're getting acquired. by Saudis. I was trying to remember the consortium has the public investment fund, Silver Lake and Infinity Partners in there. Seems like that'll probably go through later this year unless somebody stops it. It doesn't seem like that's happening. There's no number of people as part of this layoff yet. Seems to be an unreported amount, but yeah, that's sad but not surprising.
Yeah, and it's just the first of mass layoff stories we got here.
Yeah. We have Ubisoft, who has laid off 93 people in San Francisco. We know the specific number because of California's WARN notice policy, which stands for Worker Adjustment and Retraining Notification. That essentially, when you're going to lay off people, you need to post a notice about how many people are being laid off and from where.
Yeah.
And this is at their San Francisco office that doesn't really make games. I don't believe they do a lot of PR and other stuff there. So, yeah, that's a shame. But surprising because Ubisoft is in the mode where they are finding every bit of redundancy they can across their many studios and lay them off at some point. So, yeah, there you go. There's your Ubisoft news.
Yep.
And especially being an office of people in one of the more expensive places to run.
Oh, yeah.
It's not surprising there. And speaking of San Francisco, Keywords, a support company that does a lot of support work, localization, marketing, audio development, art production, QA testing, more. They've announced that they are laying off 128 people in San Francisco, their office there. Or I don't know if they have an office there or what, but yeah. Unclear what roles or departments have been impacted, but yeah, they were bought by a Swedish investment firm.
Mm-hmm.
Which I assume is a private equity firm. I don't know what they may call it there, but they were acquired back in 2024, and yeah, not surprised. Again, San Francisco, these people, and their pay is more expensive than people around the world they may have. And so that's certainly somewhere where they would try to cut off some amount of payroll there.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, so that's a bunch more people there getting laid off.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. That's what, 5 stories so far of layoffs and shutdowns.
Mm-hmm.
Then we get to the biggest one of the week, which involves Bungie. After finishing up their final content update for Destiny 2, they ended up laying off 292 people. Washington State has their own WARN system for this that has 292 people listed as being part of this layoff. There might be some extras because they mentioned that some Sony Interactive Entertainment staff who supported the studio from elsewhere have also been made redundant. But yeah, this is most of the Destiny 2 team as well as some Marathon team members. Because yeah, that game is out, but is also, you know, past the launch period, and now they're at the point of just making new content for that game. So yeah, seems like they just did not get any new projects greenlit in the time frame they were, you know, they had for whenever this would be coming out. Unfortunately, and I'm sure Destiny 3 was pitched a couple times at least. And I'm not surprised that wouldn't be greenlit, because they just went through, you know, 12 years of Destiny 2, I think. Destiny 2. And they essentially finished the main story, and then it seemed like the audience was like, all right, that's great for us. We're done. And, you know, the the audience kind of dwindled from there to the point that it wasn't really financially able to keep it going.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. They did have the one game that was called, I think, codenamed Gummy Bears. The people working on that were spun off into their own team, working under PlayStation, because they seemed to like that project enough to move that into its own thing.
Yeah.
From Bungie's incubation program. But nothing else really seemed to get out of there.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. That's just sad, because Bungie is probably one of the most well-regarded studios, despite a lot of the internal stuff we see about the studio being like almost like they're a chicken with their heads cut off a lot of the times. The way that like Halo 2 kind of just wasn't finished time. They just kind of put out what they had, which caused that campaign just be so kind of weird in the way it progresses at a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
Halo 3 came out pretty good. I don't know if there was too much there that was like obviously bad. But that, at that point, they were kind of ready to break out from Microsoft. They finished up their like deal with Microsoft with Halo Reach, which was also great, and then broke out on their own, work on Destiny, and that was its own kind of disaster for a while until they turned it around. Destiny 2 came out, did really well, and then they went free to play and then had to deal with a lot of weird stuff with that. Paid expansions for a paid game. Every year is a bit different than a free to play game that you're supporting all year round. Especially when you're doing seasonal stuff.
Yeah.
And all that, which they did well for a while, had some expansions were not great. I think the one where it was called, it was the one that had like grappling hooks and all that, like neon soaked areas you're going through.
Mm-hmm.
Ended up being, looked really cool, but ended up being terrible from what I've heard.
Yeah.
But it seems like people that are, you know, going to be back into the game now that it's, you know, quote unquote content complete, are having a lot of fun with it. But unfortunately, it's just not a thing that's going to monetize too well for the foreseeable future. And it's sad that they couldn't get another project going. So just keeping them around. But at least like your Pete Parsons and all that got to run off after making a bunch of bad decisions with tons of money from Sony.
Yeah.
Without really any repercussions.
Mm.
Unfortunately, it's all the people below the team running the company that have to suffer time and time again.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, hopefully Marathon does well. I don't know, we'll see.
Yeah,
they did announce they're doing a PvE mode that's launching in a few weeks here for solo players and anybody that just wants PvE stuff. That sounds pretty cool from what they've talked about of it, so I might jump back in pretty soon on that. So yeah, unfortunately it's about 300 people here being let go. Wish them all the best, but there's so many people still looking for jobs. I don't know what these people are going out into as far as this market is concerned.
Yeah. Not
looking great. So I don't know what you have to add, Brandon.
No, other than, you know, it's just another example of, you know, the overall industry being in a state of contraction. There was this huge bubble that the AAA industry was pumping up over the last, I want to say 15 years, maybe more. And like everybody could see that it was eventually going to pop, and it popped.
Yeah.
And now the industry is scrambling to, you know, claw back as much money as it can just so it can stay afloat.
Yeah.
So that means that they're going to basically cut off dead weight.
Yeah, especially for developers in high cost of living cities, which Seattle is also one of those, much like San Francisco, LA, New York, any of those kind of cities.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we had two French, or no, well, technically Ubisoft is French, but had one French studio, one Korean, EA, which would be California. Ubisoft and Keywords, also California.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fortunately, it's not cheap to operate in a lot of these states here in the US.
Yeah.
So I guess if you're going to be making cuts, those are people that are going to suffer more than other people around the world.
Yeah. I mean, it, pretty much.
Unfortunately, Sony owns a bunch of studios in California and Seattle.
Yes, they do.
What, it's Insomniac, it's Sucker Punch, it's Bungie, it's Naughty Dog, Sony Santa Monica, Sony San Diego, who else they have? Those are the six that come to mind immediately.
Yeah, like right off the top of our head.
And that's not great. San Diego at least seems steadier down there. I mean, they got a game every year for MLB The
Yeah.
Show. That secures their jobs a little more than most people. Those are going to be studios that get trimmed every so often, unfortunately. Especially if they're not building up for a game, which Bungie definitely isn't. They're basically working on Marathon for the time being. And
Yeah.
that doesn't need hundreds of people.
Nope.
So, yeah, that's more sad news. And I don't know if you have anything to add on any of this layoff news and all that.
No, I don't. It's just really fucking depressing.
Yeah.
I mean, we all saw it coming. Like I said, we knew it was coming.
Yeah.
We knew that, you know, this whole system was eventually going to break under its own weight. And we kept saying that it was, and it still did.
Yeah. And we still don't officially have the Xbox layoffs yet.
Nope.
That was
And
just people being rumored and yeah.
those are going to be bad.
Yeah.
We're talking like three digits, if not four.
Yeah, it's going to be potentially multiple studios getting shut down if they are not able to find funding to buy themselves out. And there's not a ton of funding out there. There's not really anybody doing great. So yeah, that's our news of the week, ending on another bummer.
Yep. Get used to it, folks. It's not gonna end.
Yeah, we're at the end of a quarter, so that's kind of where that's gonna be happening. We got 2 more days of announcements, so wouldn't be surprised if Xbox gets announced in the next day or so here.
Yeah, if not earlier.
So yeah, that's I think gonna do it for the show this week.
Yep.
Thank you, Brandon, for joining.
Always.
We should hopefully have banner up for next week. Evo will hopefully be over by then, and he'll be
Yeah.
able to make it back from Las Vegas to I think San Jose is where he's at. Have a safe trip there. But yeah, that is going to do it for the show this week. I'm gonna see if there's anything coming out this week. I don't know. Not really much happening right now. But yeah, thank you all for tuning in. If you enjoy the show, feel free to let friends and family know. They should check it out. And to select strangers who are hopefully hoping for as few people to lose their jobs as possible. Xbox.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll get some slightly good news out of there.
God, I hope so.
But yeah, thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead. We will see you all next time. Have a good one.
Bye.